completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavata Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. Continuing the commentary by Srila Prabhupada. In the Vedas, the above-mentioned four activities are prescribed in the regulative way so that there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all these sense gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature which can be understood only by the pure devotees of the Lord who are transcendental to competitive sense gratification. In the material world, there is keen competition between animal and animal, man and man, community and community, nation and nation. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialist because they are on the path back to Godhead, where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore there is competition. But the transcendental devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but are well-wishers to everyone, and they strive to establish a competitionless society with God in the center. The contemporary socialist's conception of a competitionless society is artificial, because in the socialist state there is competition for the post of dictator. From the point of view of the Vedas, or from the point of view of common human activities, sense gratification is the basis of material life. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshipping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. And another involves realizing the absolute truth and his impersonal feature and becoming one with him. Om Agyana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputramatra Swarupam Rupam Tas Yagajam Urupurim Maturim Boshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavascha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitascha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Yeah, the first verse of Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth, to use Srila Prabhupada's phraseology. So then we may ask, well, what about dharma? That's an important subject, isn't it? And the Mimamsa Sutra, there was this Janmadhyasya Yataha, which hits on the target of the absolute truth. Atato Brahma Jignyasa Janmadhyasya Yataha. So this hits on the target of the absolute truth, that Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now we should inquire into Brahma, the Absolute, and the introduction to that, or the definition of Brahma, Janmadhyasya Yataha, that by which that from which everything comes, that by which everything is maintained, and that into which everything ultimately enters. These are the first two aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra or the Brahma Sutra. But there's also the Mimamsa Sutra, which begins, Atato Dharma Jignasa. Now we should inquire into Dharma. So the Mimamsakas, they are concerned with following Dharma for the sake of heavenly life, attaining worldly pleasures. They're fools, very highly learned and expert in dissecting the Vedas in the wrong way. Fools. So, what about Dharma? That is answered herein, or that is addressed. Dharma projita kaitava atra. That which is considered Dharma, that which is generally considered Dharma, is completely rejected. And Srila Prabhupada has opened his commentary by discussing what is generally considered to be Dharma. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. And he goes on to explain, as I just read now, that these four activities, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma means religious activities. Artha means, or points toward, economic activities. Kama, sense gratificatory activities. And moksha, activities meant to stop all other activities. And the desire for liberation. So the Vedas prescribe these in a regulative way so there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. Sense gratification being the, as Srila Prabhupada explains here, the underlying principle of material life. That question came up last night that I had quoted, Ahara nidra bhayamaitunam cha samanya metat pashubhyanaranam dharmen. Dharmo hitesham adhiko visesham. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending are the basic propensities of both animals and humans, but animals have the special prerogative of dharma, of following dharma. So the question was raised, well, what about art, science, technology? These are endeavors that are particular to humans, not to animals. Of course, they also have, there is some technology among certain lower species, such as the bees and the ants, the beavers. And even there is some kind of art among some of them. The dancing of peacocks, some kind of art. Spider web, yeah. Art and technology, all for the sake of catching a fly to eat. So it is there, but it's certainly more developed in human life. And I responded to that well, it's all the art, science, and technology in human life, in philosophy. These are all there in human life, not in animal life. Philosophy, not in animal life, and not much in human life either, unfortunately. But these are all taking place on the foundation of sense gratification. However, in one sense, the art, science, philosophy of even materialistic people can be considered dharma in some way, in as much as it is there is some seeking for the purpose of life, or some moving toward a higher level of consciousness, we might hope. However, Srila Prabhupada points out in this paragraph that I just read, that it's all done on the platform of competition. One artist wants to show himself to be better than others. The reputation of being an artist is important to him. And generally we find that artists are extremely egoistic people. Is it not? Not in every case, but in many cases.
And a little eccentric too.
Prabhupada said crazy.
Crazy.
I would really think crazy, but I would think polite.
Eccentric, yeah. Eccentric. That's one of the, I can't remember his name. What's his name? There's the son of Nara Narayana. I can't just know. Kuvalaya. Yeah, he gave some really eccentric, being an artist, he gave some eccentric names. So he told me that he was doing art, paintings, and he got a little recognition, and just out of, just for the hell of it, he grew a little French mustache and had this kind of a French, little French beard and mustache curled up like that. And he said the people coming to his exhibitions, they were already respectful to him because he was the artist, but they really thought, wow, this is the real thing. It's so superficial. And he thought it was a big joke. He did it as a joke, but the people took it very seriously. So it's science, this. Going to the moon, one step for mankind, one small step for man and one great step for mankind. And now the utterer of those famous pre-scripted words has now taken a few steps down he's taken a cosmic journey that everyone has to take with or without a rocket ship. Neil Armstrong, the astronaut, for those of you who don't read the news, died 2 days ago, 2 or 3 days ago. You gave him a book? Perfection of Yoga. I was going to say, maybe Easy Journey to Other Planets, in which Prabhupada states that they cannot go to the moon, if he ever happened to read it. So he may have, by the mercy that you gave him, he may have made an easy journey to other planets. Actually, everyone makes an easy journey to other planets, but most of the planets people make easy journeys to, they're not very relishable to go to. Anyway, getting back to dharma. So in one sense, we could say that art, philosophy, science, and all this are dharma, which they distinguish the human from the animal, but not very much because of the competition that's there in which Srila Prabhupada refers to this as competition. That's on the basis of survival, the defense, the animalistic propensity of defense of the body, and sex, to show one better than another for the sake of attracting the opposite sex, just like the peacock's dance with his beautiful feathers spread out, impressing the peahens who might be around. So the Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth. Dharma is certainly important, but this kind of dharma, Kaitava dharma, that is rejected. For those who will say, well, what about dharma? This is the answer. It is rejected here. Herein, Srila Prabhupada, as usual, he intertwines purport with the translation, and describes that Kaitava Dharma as religious activities which are materially motivated. So that's described later in Bhagavatam, dharmasya hi apabhargasya nartotai opakalpate. Nartasya dharmaikantasya, what's the last line? Kamaulabhaya hismita. That one's dharma should not be performed, or should be performed, first of all, for the sake of ultimate liberation from this world, and not for material gain. And one should desire, what should one desire? Healthy life, only because human life affords the possibility of ultimate liberation. So, the absolute, the highest truth is also discussed herein, in this verse. In the previous verse, the highest truth was directly referred to Satyam Param, as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And herein, although the highest truth is not directly mentioned in the Sanskrit, Srila Prabhupada brings that in, Vedyam Vastava Matra Vastu. This is the actual subject of the Vedas. So the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all, which makes it a good point to read the next paragraph in the purport. The impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is not the highest. We have to discuss here the highest truth. But the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is not the highest. Above the impersonal feature is the Paramatma feature, and above this is the personal feature of the absolute truth, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam gives information about the absolute truth in his personal feature. It is higher than impersonalist literatures and higher than the Jnana Kanda division of the Vedas. It is even higher than the Karma Kanda division and even higher than the Upasana Kanda division, because it recommends the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. In the Karma Kanda, there is competition to reach heavenly planets for better sense gratification, and there is similar competition in the Jnana Kanda and the Upasana Kanda. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all of these because it aims at the Supreme Truth, which is the substance or the root of all categories. From Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. The substance is the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of energy. So, generally, when people become interested in the highest truth, they generally gravitate toward an impersonal understanding, a vagueness. Srila Prabhupada's writings are clearly distinguished from that of the many writings in English, popular now, and have been available in English for some various writers for 100 years. I guess the first, there was Vivekananda, Yogananda. They were, especially Yogananda's writings were more popular in the West. They were never that popular. But nowadays there's a flood of pseudo impersonal literature. When I say pseudo, I mean because it doesn't really follow the tradition of Shankaracharya. But it's all very vague. People talk of love and compassion and cosmic consciousness and all these things, but nothing very clearly defined. And they think that lack of preciseness is something spiritual. Srila Prabhupada's writings are quite different to that, in that they're very clear. Very simple and very clear. Just like this statement, the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. Just now the highest truth has been described as Krishna, and now from another perspective, the highest truth is described as reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. So this, again, this distinguishes it from the writings of New Agers who speak of, again, love, truth, cosmic consciousness, but nothing is very clear what they're writing about. It doesn't distinguish what or define what that love, truth, and so on is, and doesn't distinguish it from illusion, because actually it is another form of illusion. They've not understood what is the truth. Sattvang yad brahma darshanam, in clear consciousness, one can see what is reality. It's not simply a light. It's not simply a question of painting all the walls in a room white with no windows, and then having a light, and then there's nothing to see but white everywhere. Distinguishing the absolute truth. The truth means to distinguish reality from illusion, which indicates that the truth is not something impersonal. If it was impersonal, then there wouldn't be anything to distinguish. And that's what impersonalism is all about. Non-distinction. Nirvishesh. It's all about non-distinction. But here Srila Prabhupada makes the point that truth is distinguishable. It can be seen as something very different from illusion. There's no in impersonalism, there's no distinction of any kind. That means truth and illusion are all the same. Because there is no, then ultimately they say there's no truth, there's no illusion, and it's all no, 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 not this, not that. And what it all comes down to ultimately is their own egoism and their own lust under a bombastic cover of spirituality. So, Srila Prabhupada very simply and clearly presents the truth. One of the sayings of Einstein, so I've heard, is that if you can't explain it to your grandmother, you don't understand it yourself. Grandmother's supposed to be simple. Yeah, simple. So the ultimate truth is very simple. Which, considering that the Srimad Bhagavatam is compiled, Mahamuni Krite, compiled by Vyasadeva, who's vastly learned with vision of past, present, and future, compiled in his maturity, after he had compiled all the Vedic knowledge, which covers all categories of human existence, the knowledge of the Vedas. But ultimately, the truth that is to be understood is very simple. And actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur defined Vaishnavism as simplicity. So it's not possible to be a Vaishnava without being simple. Now, simple means to have a clear, straightforward understanding of reality, to be non-duplicitous, because if one is duplicitous, if one is in the competition mode, if one deals with others with the aim of showing one's mastery over them, exploiting them, then his dealings will be duplicitous. But a Vaishnava is straightforward and simple because he has nothing, he feels he has nothing to take from anyone. He's satisfied in himself. Nor does he desire to put anyone down. Nor does he desire to put anyone up materially. He's detached. A Vaishnava is detached from all of this. And a Vaishnava has simple faith in Krishna. Krishna is my protector, maintainer, rakshishyatiti vishvaso goptritve varanam tata. So a Vaishnava is simple in that sense, and a Vaishnava is simple because despite all the tremendous complexity of all the knowledge that is to be understood, a Vaishnava sees the essence. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are all his servants. We are suffering in this material world due to forgetfulness of Krishna. Therefore, we should remember Krishna and serve him. That's all. Very simple. So, one may study and become deeply learned in Vaishnava understanding. And there may seem to be some complex points, various contradictions, some subtle philosophical points which are not very easy to understand. But a devotee should not be mesmerized by the complexity or the vast ocean of knowledge. There are so many commentaries by our acharyas which are that's suitable for devotees to study, those who have the time and the inclination. Many of them are not translated, so not translated into English. They're translated into some Indian languages. Or you could learn Sanskrit to read them all. Or you can just read Srila Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada said that by reading my books, one gets in touch with the acharyas. And of course, in his books, he also recommends too that those who want to understand this matter more, they should read the writings of the previous acharyas. So that is not proscribed from our Vaishnava practices. But one should be careful also that by entering into the vast arena of knowledge of Shastra, that one does not lose one's simplicity and become bewildered by so many different statements. Different acharyas have somewhat different perspectives. Even some acharyas may say something completely different, what appears to be completely different to another acharya. One may find some apparently contradictory statement, but simple, keep it simple. Simple understanding, keep prominent. We're here to serve Krishna. Knowledge is not of itself. Even knowledge of Shastra, even knowledge of Krishna is not in and of itself the essence. Even if one becomes very learned, the essence is to satisfy Krishna and please Krishna. And following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, that even though we may become very learned in understanding all the points of Vaishnavism, all the teachings of previous acharyas and so on, but following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, we should keep our presentation in a manner that we ourselves don't become bewildered by our own mental concoctions, and that we don't that others can also understand everything very clearly and accept the essence. Not everyone can be a very great scholar, but everyone can accept the essence. That question also came up last night. Well, what about someone who they're born in a Vaishnava family and by their culture they have faith in Krishna, but they don't have knowledge like we people who are all educated in the modern age, but My reply was that, well, they do have knowledge, even if they don't know how to read and write. If they have the good fortune, to, due to their previous devotional activities, to be born in a Vaishnava family, then they learn from the beginning that Krishna is supreme and we have to serve him. And that's knowledge. That is the highest knowledge. Whether or not you go to a university and get all kinds of degrees and you can give big lectures on all about it and trip up over your own philosophical complexities, but someone who understands that Krishna is supreme and we have to serve him, that's the highest knowledge. So that Srila Prabhupada also said once when he was walking in Vrindavan on a morning walk, and one farmer out early in his field, working in the field, came and offered obeisance to Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada noted that, well, if this is in America and we walked on someone's field, they might pull out a gun and threaten to shoot us for trespassing. But the farmer said, I'm very fortunate that saintly people have come on my land. So Srila Prabhupada said, this man, he's not educated, but he's more knowledgeable than big professors in the Western countries. This because this man understands that I'm in the situation I am presently due to my previous deeds, and a saintly person has come, I should offer obeisance, and I should feel very fortunate that the land I consider mine has been touched by his lotus feet, which is actually a fact. So, reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. That's a big subject. Maybe I'll... Anyway, all these subjects, they could be talked on more and more and more and more and more. But this point of always finding the truth, distinguishing from illusion, even within devotional service, what is actual devotional service, what is not, it may appear to be the same. That is warned about by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that there may be, what may appear to be bhakti is not actually bhakti, but there's an outward performance of bhakti. But rather than pure devotion for Krishna being cultivated, personal desires are being cultivated. So one has to be very careful. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any questions? Please. Yeah?
I didn't have a question, I have a comment. Maybe you can expand on it or whatever. But you were saying about Prabhupada's simple presence, simple but very powerful.
Simple, clear, and powerful. Yeah, statement after statement we find in Srila Prabhupada's books. Just the other day, there was this one, in the first verse, one line from the purport. Unless one surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, it is certain that he will be bewildered. Seems like a very simple statement, but
profound.
It's extremely profound. And then people who are searching for knowledge after many, many lifetimes, they're still bewildered. And that's all they have to understand. And Prabhupada just gives it like that. And the fact that Prabhupada has got complete understanding and realization of that is clear from his absolutely clear presentation of the point with absolutely no ambiguity whatsoever.
I was going to add just two things.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
But the Sariputta Prabhu was an excellent teacher. He was really a good teacher. And one of his qualifications was that he profoundly, deeply understood the subject matter.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah, very important point. Sadaputa, I'll just say that again. It goes in here. Sadaputa Prabhu, according to Badri Narayan Prabhu, whose authority I will accept in this regard, was an excellent teacher. Anyone who knew anything about him knew he was a genius type whose understanding and of science and transcendence, his intellectual understanding of science and transcendence was just way, way above ordinary mortals like ourselves. He was an excellent teacher. He was able to convey to others and make them understand. So he said that the prime qualification of a teacher is to fully understand the principles oneself, and that, quoting what I just quoted from Einstein, that if you actually understand a subject matter, you should be able to explain it to your grandmother. He said that his, Sadaputta Prabhu, said that his experience in academia is that those who actually understood the subject matter could express it very clearly, straightforwardly, in a manner that others can understand, whereas those who didn't really understand it, who'd learned the subject, but who didn't really understand it very clearly, they would tend to waffle and make it sound as if they understood a lot more than others, but they actually didn't.
And one other short thing I wanted to say, Hari Sarikrupa told me this, that Prabhupada, you know, he used to get letters from, you know, all kinds of people, and he'd get reviews of his books. And this one big professor, I don't know, Oxford, Harvard, Cornell, I don't know where it was, but the guy wrote and said, you know, no doubt the books by Bhaktivedanta Swami, beautifully presented, he praised the binding, the paintings, everything. But then he said, my only problem is with the purports. And he says, every purport, although obviously giving history and culture, they always come to this point of bhakti. And when they read that, the Hari Sarikrupa probably slammed his hand on the mat and laughed. He said, I've written these books in such a way that they cannot squeeze any other meaning out of it.
Very nice. Hari Sarikrupa Prabhu would receive and read letters to Srila Prabhupada. Well, actually, he didn't mostly read the letters. The secretary would, but Hari Sarikrupa Prabhu might be present sometimes. So he said, one review came from a professor, in which the professor, praising the get-up of the books, the binding, the paintings, and so on, said that, my only problem is that Bhaktivedanta Swami has written the purports with a wealth of cultural and philosophical knowledge and history and so on. But the only problem is, whatever he says just comes to the point of bhakti. Upon hearing which, Srila Prabhupada slammed his hand down and said, yes, that is exactly the point. I've written these books in such a way that they cannot avoid this. They cannot misinterpret. So Srila Prabhupada, he sometimes took what was meant as derogatory criticism as a compliment. There was another time in Mauritius, he was actually the British ambassador to Mauritius, to be the British ambassador to Mauritius is not the same as being the British ambassador to America, but anyway. Yeah. So he was present at Srila Prabhupada's arrival talk in Mauritius, and he said, well, the way you're talking, it seems that you're very clear, and don't you have any doubts? And Prabhupada said, he said, thank you. Prabhupada thanked him. He took it as a compliment. He said, and thus others are appreciating, because there's no doubts. It's all very clear. So he thought that Prabhupada's clarity was a defect based on the misunderstanding that everything is relative and no one can really know anything clearly, fully. But Srila Prabhupada took it as a compliment, not as a... You were going to say something?
Yeah. The question of Dharma. Here it says Dharma approach the kaitable, so the cheating Dharma.
The cheating dharma is rejected.
So there's also non-cheating
dharma. There's also non-cheating dharma.
So in the 1866, we get dharma, we really get sarva dharma.
Sarva dharma paritaja.
You don't need dharma.
You don't need dharma at all. Well, in one sense, but then Krishna says, Mame kam sharanam raja. So that's the dharma to come to. So here, sarvadhaman parityaja can be understood to be give up all other dharmas, because it's not possible to completely give up all dharma. And then if you to give up all dharma means to cease to exist. So it has to be understood in that way, doesn't it? You can give up dharma and just be an animal. Well, an animal also has its dharma of ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitun. But that's not... See, the word dharma is understood in different contexts. See, sugar has its dharma of being sweet. So an animal has the dharma as a living being. Prani is one of the words for animal, which also covers plant. Prani, one who has life. Jiva. So it has the dharma of being conscious, being alive. But dharma is generally used in... Yeah, that's one meaning of dharma, is the inherent characteristic. But then dharma also means to act in such a way as to be elevated. Yeah, and then that comes to dharmang hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam, to follow the orders of God. Because if one does not act according to the directions of Shastra are to actually make us come to our inherent characteristic of service to Krishna, which we have deviated from.
I was just thinking, because Krishna says in the 18th chapter we should never give up penance, austerity, and charity.
That's interesting, yeah. That yajna, dana, and tapa, sacrifice, charity, and penance, they should never be given up. And then Krishna says, give up all kinds of dharma. Yeah? Well, there could be different ways of looking at that. As long as one is within the field of dharma, dharma kshetra, then these activities are to be performed. But then sarvadhaman parityaja mame kam sharanam raja, giving up all illusory forms of yajna, dana, and tapa, then come to taking shelter of me, do this in relation to me. Could be understood like that. I must admit, I never thought of that before. Interesting observation.
Well, and that's interesting, because I thought you answered it by saying that you give up all other dharmas, but the essence of dharma, real dharma, is service to Krishna. And in that context...
And within that, one should do yajna, dana, and tapa. Yes, see. How... Satang prasangan mama virya samvida. So in the association of devotees, we should discuss all these topics. So many points will come out. Yeah. How does one come to be properly situated in Krishna consciousness? Just like one's service, one's ashram, and so on. Well, in the beginning, it's best to concentrate just on the essence, generally speaking, in whatever situation one may be in. And try to understand that. When one has... understood and internalized to some extent the essence, then how and become somewhat fixed in Krishna consciousness, then it may be considered in exactly what situation one may continue to do so according to one's the psychophysical propensities that one has acquired in this lifetime. And how to do that? Well, that's all part of the discussion of Varnashram, which hasn't been established within our society yet. So we can do in discussion with senior devotees, those who can help us and guide us in this.
Okay. Thank you, Guru Maharaj. Okay. So you were speaking that everyone cannot become learned. Maybe you're implying in general, of course, like material knowledge.
Yeah, not everyone can become learned. Not only material knowledge, but even spiritual knowledge. Not everyone's going to become a great student of Shastra.
Right. So also we hear in Shastra that the symptoms of a Uttama Adhikari is that he's very learned in Shastra.
Mm-hmm.
So I have two questions.
One of the symptoms. It's not exactly that he's very learned in Shastra. That's not exactly what's said. The exact words are Shastra Yuktye Sunipun Dridha Shraddhaja Uttamadhikari She Tareye Shangsha. One who is expert in harmonizing the statements of Shastra and who has firm faith. Such a person is called an Uttamadhikari. So we see, for instance, in the personage of Srila Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj, even though he wasn't learned in Shastra in terms of memorizing verses and so on, but the essence of Shastra, he was completely, exactly on the line for that. And thus he could put on the line Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself, of course, who we know is Uttamadhikari or Mahabhagavat Vaishnava, but he, we can say at least for the sake of pastimes, he found that his life's direction was given by Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that all the conclusions of Shastra can be found in one grain of dust at the lotus feet of Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj. So it's not necessarily that one may have read many books, but the essence of full surrender to Krishna, doing everything, then that will be revealed to him. And we shouldn't think that Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj is something less than Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because he was apparently a very simple kind of person in every respect. But the ideal which they preached, he exemplified that, of complete detachment from the world and total absorption in Krishna. So, of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur did also, but that wasn't apparent to everyone. To some people, they looked like people of this world or people who are interested in argument for argument's sake. So, in the most unambiguous way, what it means to be absorbed in Krishna, everything they preached about, was demonstrated by Gaur Kishor Das Babaji Maharaj. But from the external perspective, he wasn't learned in Shastra, although he was certainly completely in tune with the essence and could tell that also. He accepted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and instructed him. He didn't accept everyone. Many people came to him. He didn't accept them all. Another point is that he had memorized all the songs of Narottam Das, which that's all Shastra is right there, in the songs of Narottam Das. All the essence of Shastra is right there. Maybe not all the details, but the essence is certainly there. Hare Krishna! Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shishi Gornitai ki jai, Shishi Radha Giridhari ki jai, Jagannath Subhadra Baladevi ki jai. Hare Krishna.